peddlers who've shut them out politically. The party powers are insisting that the Donald is winning only because he's drawing voters who are ignorant, racist, xenophobic, and misogynist. In fact, he's drawing huge numbers of disaffected Republicans who are mainly anti the party's own power players. Far from being coke-headed, laissez-faire ideologues, these voters liked Trump's opposition to job-busting trade scams, his mocking of big-money campaign donations, his call to hike taxes on Wall Street's pampered hedge funders, his support for Social Security, etc. For these voters, Operation Paul Ryan is a dud, a farce, and an insult. Representative Ryan has long been the kept darling of the Wall Street K Street crowd. The obtuse establishment snootily calls him serious presidential material, only because he champions such plutocratic policies as privatizing Social Security, cutting taxes on the super rich, deregulating Wall Street, and turning Medicare into a voucher system. The only thing serious about Ryan's agenda is that it's a dead serious loser with a great majority of Americans. This is Jim Hightower saying, trying to knock off Trump for Ryan is a sign of the GOP's irreversible decline into cluelessness and political irrelevance.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
I'm Human Radio is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR members and by the third annual NorCal Jazz Festival featuring the Jimmy Grant Ensemble. Featuring the Jimmy Grant Ensemble CD release party on April 14th at the Women's Club, and the internationally acclaimed Meta Quintet from New York City on April 17th in the Sierra Nevada Big Room. Opening the Big Room show is Chico's own Kazira. There are also shows in Reading and Dunsmuir. Visit norcaljazzfestival.com for a full schedule and tickets. Tickets for Jimmy Grant are also at the Chico Paper Company. Like us on Facebook or call 520-4742 for details and sponsorship. This is KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, foothills, and beyond. Up next, Non-Human Radio. Welcome to Non-Human Radio, where we talk animal rights and veganism every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. here on KZFR 90.1 FM or online at kzfr.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Non-Human Radio. I'm Jeannie Trezino.
And I'm Robert Jones. Tonight on Non-Human Radio, a discussion of cutting-edge animal rights ethics and philosophy, and we'll talk about my vegan big city exploits.
The big city in question being San Francisco.
And a jam-packed vegan calendar of events. But first, as usual, it's time for the latest animal rights. Oh, no, we're skipping the news tonight, aren't we, Jeannie?
Yes, goodness. We are. There was no news to be shared.
There's no vegan news tonight.
The philosophy conference you went to was so amazing.
Oh, that's what it was. Okay, so that's the thing. Well, let's tell you. Let's talk about that. We can catch up. So I was. In case you tuned in last week and were expecting to hear Robert Jones, instead you heard Patrice Jones. What was that about?
We had a great time listening to Patrice Jones's talk and foundational explanation of intersectionality, and how speciesism is at the foundation of understanding other isms like racism, sism.
Yeah, it was an amazing. I listened to a bit of it. Even though I was in San Francisco, I got to listen to a little bit online. But I was actually, while you were doing the show, Gene, you were doing an amazing job here by yourself. I was actually in San Francisco. I was at the American Philosophical Association Conference, which is basically a bunch of nerdy philosophers get together and they talk about all their weird philosophy things.
How many philosophers were there?
Jeez, that's a good question.
And was it like nationwide or just like a region or what?
It's the Pacific, so it's not nationwide.
So it's
just
a subset.
It's a subset of all the philosophers in the United States, and it was I don't know. There were hundreds of philosophers there.
How many of them were vegan?
maybe like one half of 1%.
So we have the pinnacle of rational thought, and the percentage of vegans only reflect the same amount as the national population, if not less?
Probably less.
That is sad to say.
So there's an argument against rational thought as contributing to a more ethical lifestyle, contra Aristotle. Well, anyway, it was an interesting conference, but I put together a panel, and I have somewhere in front of me. I put together a panel. So to put together a panel, what it means is that you get a bunch of philosophers together who are of like mind, and you put together a panel on a particular subject. So my panel was a panel about speciesism. I'm looking at the program right now. It says the topic is "What is to be done? Speciesism as extermination." That was our topic. So, for those of you who don't know, "What is to be done?" is it's a popular phrase. It was used by Lenin back in the old Soviet Union. What is to be done? And the session that we put together, there were four philosophers, and all of us, it was me and three other philosophers, and all of us were vegan animal rights people. And these people that I shared this session with, they're all doing like cutting edge animal rights ethics stuff. It was really interesting. And I'll give you an idea of what was on the program. So we had a philosopher from Queen's University up in Canada. Her name is Zipporah Weisberg. And she gave a talk. It was called "Oh for the Voices of Animals Learning to Listen." Actually, I think she changed the title, but that's the title I have written down. She gave a great talk. And she's a good friend of mine in the animal ethics world. And then Christiane Bailey, she's a philosopher up there in Quebec. She gave a talk about animal agency. And this was really, you would have really liked this. I was thinking about, you know, how you would enjoy it when I was sitting there, because she was giving this argument about how animals have these kinds of emotional responses to things. Like, you know, when you yell at a dog or you're mean to an animal, it obviously has a kind of emotional response. And that kind of emotional response is shared with animals and non-human animals and humans. And that's obviously, you know, it's ethically significant. So anyway, she gave this talk about how that plays into agency and ethics and our treatment of animals. And so that was a really interesting talk. But the best talk, and then I gave a talk too. I'm not saying mine was, I was going to save that for last, but I gave a talk. My talk was called "Is Anti-Speciesism a Form of Exterminism?" Do you have any idea what the heck that I'm talking about when I say that?
No, you sent me forum PDF of the schedule, and I saw that title. And I'm like, I don't know what exterminism means in this context, nor do I know what it means to compare speciesism to extermination.
Yeah, these are good questions.
I just have a question too. So just to set the stage.
Yeah.
So this is like your classic kind of panel talk. Like all the speakers are sitting at a table.
Exactly.
And then there's one person. Are you speaking to a big group of people or?
Well, I since this is radio and no one was there, I could lie and say that the room was packed with hundreds of people. But let me tell you about why I can't say that is because this panel convened in San Francisco on a Friday night at 7 p.m.
Oh, I see.
So 7 to 10 p.m. in San Francisco. So the philosophers who were at the conference, they had the choice of seeing a panel of four vegan animal rights philosophy activists or to go out and enjoy the city of San Francisco.
Or to go out and have dinner and eat some animals.
And eat some animals. So it's needless to say, the panel, it wasn't packed, but there were people there. There were some familiar faces.
Okay, good. I'm glad that it wasn't an empty room. It
wasn't an empty room.
All right.
Well, the four of us, we talked about what would we do if no one showed up, and we decided that we would just, we would go have a drink and talk to each other about animal rights. So,
this wasn't recorded or anything, was it?
No, it wasn't recorded. There's no recording of it. So this idea of what I call exterminism, here's what's going on. This is I found this fascinating. That's why I've been wanting to write a paper or wanting to talk about this issue. And I think you and I, we shared, I think I sent you an article about branding, you know, branding of cattle. It's a very common practice with ranchers, even, you know, here in the North State area.
I remember that article, and it's a common practice, and it's highly defended by the good ranchers of the North State.
And I know that people, I'm sure people know what branding is, you know, get that hot iron, but can you give me some detail, like share with us a little detail, some details behind exactly what branding involves?
It's to identify the ownership of a baby calf. They're not branded as adults, they're branded as babies, so that
the babies,
when they range as a herd grazing, the owner will be able to claim them. So in case they get intermixed with another herd, or God forbid there's a cattle rustler, the perpetrator can be identified as having stolen goods.
So let me just interrupt.
There used to be face branding, but that was outlawed several years ago.
In case you just tuned in, you're listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR at 90.1 FM, Chico, and worldwide at kzfr.org. So, Jeannie, yeah, they take these little calves and they take a hot iron with their brand and they...
They're electric hot irons now.
So they're really hot.
Yeah.
And they burn into the flesh.
So yeah, it's a third-degree burn.
Third-degree burns. Yeah. Leaves a scar.
And it's a scar for life.
The identifying mark. So... This practice has been identified, and this article that you and I you had sent me or vice versa, it basically was talking about branding. But here's the thing that got me so interested. I was so interested because I started reading, like, foolishly, I started reading the comments right underneath the end.
Never read the comments.
Never read the comments. Now she tells me, why didn't you tell me that before? I was reading the comments. And I actually printed out here. I have right here in front of me as I shuffle my papers. I was told that I shuffle papers too much on the radio, but I'm using it as an effect, actually. So,
you know,
here's one of the comments that I read that got me thinking, right? Jeannie, here's what someone said in response to the anti-branding article online. It said, this is what someone wrote. This person's name is Marcus. Quote, "You have no right to critique a culture that has been around for hundreds of years."
Such an exaggeration.
"Have you ever been in a situation where a rancher loses a calf in another rancher's herd and has no brand of proof? You have no right whatsoever to belittle the men and women who make their living off of raising cattle or other livestock. You have never lived the life or been part of it, so you have only a one-sided opinion." So, of course, you know, what I just read is standard kind of response. It's a kind of response that you hear. But here's what fascinated me, Jeannie. I was fascinated as a philosopher, as an animal rights person. This claim that to end branding or to, you know, a kind of vegan world or something like that, to end those practices is a kind of cultural imperialism, which is, it's an amazing argument to me in the sense that it stands the critique of cultural imperialism on its head. Let me just give you a one-minute synopsis of cultural imperialism. The notion that my culture and the practices in my culture are the right and the best and the only practices to be followed, and you're a cultural imperialist when you force other cultures to adopt or conform to your practices, right? So you know, especially when it comes to things like ethics, not driving on the left side of the road or something. So this is a kind of leftist critique of the right, saying there's a lot of cultural imperialism in American, everyone has to be Western, right? So I thought this was fascinating that ranchers who are, you know, typically, not always, but typically sort of leaning towards the right side of the political spectrum, ranchers are adopting a cultural, anti-cultural imperialist argument, saying, you vegans, you want us to stop branding our cattle, but you've never been in our culture and you're trying to exterminate. This is where the word exterminism comes from. You're trying to exterminate our culture.
Okay.
Thought that was fascinating. What do you think about that?
Here's what I find fascinating is,
yeah.
And this is what I noticed while I was reading your paper in preparation for this show, is that, and maybe it's not to the point of your paper, but it's not necessary that a vegan make this critique of branding.
True.
Any animal lover can make that critique of branding, and you know, and they do. That's why face branding was outlawed, not because of animal rights activists, although we helped, but it was because there was a commonality of all animal lovers to decry that particular procedure.
Yeah, so you don't even have to be a friend of the animal rights movement. You can just think, I feel sorry for a little calf that has to have his face burned.
Yeah.
So this reply here that I just read from this person online, you know, was actually criticizing, was pointing the finger of response towards people like you and me, vegans who are animal rights people.
That says something else about the situation.
Exactly. And I thought that was fascinating. So basically, in a nutshell, I won't go into the details, but I just thought I need to respond to, I thought it would be fascinating and interesting to respond to ranchers who are claiming that people like me, who are animal rights activists and vegans, and publicly so, and I do so professionally and passionately, people like me are trying to end a culture. I'm being a bully, and I'm trying to end part of their culture because it's been here for a couple hundred years. So I'll give you in a nutshell what here. You know what I think about this, Jeannie? I think. What were you going to ask me? What I think?
Go ahead. I'm dying to hear.
Thanks. So what I think is this: is that this culture. I do agree with the ranchers that they do have a culture. And whether it's 100 or 200 or 500 years old, they do have a particular cultural practice.
A way of life.
They have a way of life, so I will not deny that. Here's what I want to question. The animals, these, quote, livestock that are commodified and objectified by the ranchers, are they part of their culture too? Are they part of the rancher culture?
Obviously not. They're outside.
Exactly. So what we have is a cultural practice of ranching that involves an objectification, a slave relation of non-human animals. And so what I was trying to say briefly in my paper was, you can't really cry cultural imperialism in this way when the practice in question involves non-consenting sentient beings who themselves are enslaved and ultimately, you know, they're branded and dehorned for all these reasons, and then they're slaughtered and used as food. So I just think, I know it sounds kind of kooky, but I just thought that wasn't really a justification. Does that make sense?
I agree. I mean, it's not a justification. Just because something has always been done a certain way doesn't justify it to continue. I don't know if that is germane to your philosophical argument.
I think it is. Yeah.
But it's my argument that just we have changed all sorts of practices. We've talked before. You could make the same argument about slavery.
Exactly.
Right? We've always done it this way. It's our way of life to have slaves. This is our economic basis for our agriculture. You could have said that about slavery back in the 19th century.
Well, Jeannie, I don't want to belabor, because I want to talk about my favorite paper was my good friend and really just a great, great guy and intellectual, great animal rights activist, John Sabon Matsu, who's over there in Boston. I invited him out, and he gave a paper called The Animal of Bad Faith, Speciesism as Existential Project. Yes.
So he's from the East Coast.
He's from the East Coast.
He's dipping in on this West Coast regional conference.
That's true.
Because you asked him?
Because I asked him.
How very nice.
But let me just say, you know, the when it says the Pacific Philosophy Conference, it's just in name only. Anyone can come to it.
Okay.
But it's focused. I think it just means that's where it takes place. It was in San Francisco.
Okay.
So my friend John shows up, and man, he is really just a great thinker and great writer. But he presented a paper, and I just wanted to talk. In fact, I brought some of his paper to read. But you know, I thought maybe, you know, we don't have a hell of a lot of time. But I thought he had an amazing idea having to do with existentialism and this kind of view of bad faith. And just let me just clarify what philosophers like Jean-Paul Sartre mean when they talk about bad faith. Usually when we say, when you think about, if I say, Jeannie, you're acting in bad faith, that would be something like, if you made a promise to me, but you didn't keep it, and you knew you weren't going to keep it, I would say you're acting in bad faith. But that's not what Sartre means. And so Sabun Matsu made this great point. He said, what Sartre talks about when he talks about bad faith is...
And we're talking about the philosopher Jean-Paul Sartre.
Jean-Paul Sartre, the famous French existentialist philosopher from the 20th century.
Okay, so this is a modern philosopher. We're not talking about classical philosophy, right, or even 19th century philosophy we're talking about?
We're talking about
late 20th century?
Yeah, well, he was prominent after World War II.
Okay.
After the atrocities that took place in Europe, he developed this existentialist philosophy. And this notion of bad faith that John talked about, in a nutshell, it's this. This kind of existentialist bad faith is when you lie, you don't deceive someone else, you actually deceive yourself. So you lie to yourself. Now, I can't do the paper justice in this amount of time, but here's what I think was brilliant about it. His view that speciesism is, that our attitudes towards speciesism, which is the, you know, bias against non-human animals, that view is a kind of bad faith because, Jeannie, you know as well as I do, we all realize that these animals are suffering. These animals are under, they're living in horrendous conditions. And when we continue these practices and we say to ourselves things like, ah, they're just animals, or they're only animals, or they're dumb animals. Those are statements that reflect a bad faith, a kind of Sartrean bad faith, where instead of facing the facts, because they're too difficult to face, instead, what do? We just make these kinds of bad faith excuses. What do you think about that? How does that sound right?
I'm with you. I'm with you.
So I think, I mean, I could go on and on, but I'm looking at the clock here. Jeez, time's flying. So, but my point of that, you know, and actually we're going to have John on the show. We don't have a date yet.
Excellent.
But the point of his paper is that, look, we can't live in this kind of bad faith. We have to face the fact that we're doing these atrocious things to non-human animals. And as Sartre would say, that's the only way to have to live authentically. Otherwise, we're living in a kind of a falsehood.
So basically, we need to grow up. We need to face the consequences of our actions, individually and collectively as a species, of what we're doing to other non-human species.
As hard as that is.
It is hard. I've heard people say, well, it's not like I'm the person who's killing the animal, or they're only animals, or we have to eat something. Or what about plants? Don't they have feelings too?
Yeah, that's true. Well, it looks like we're heading into the home stretch. I was going to tell you guys about, I went to this place when I was there. I went to eat at a place, it's called Kit Fox. It's a vegan place in San Francisco. It's on Market in kind of the Tenderloin. I think maybe we can talk about it in the future, but I have to tell you, I had the best vegan Reuben sandwich I've ever had.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, so for those of you who are listening, if you go to San Francisco, go to a place called Kit Fox. It's right there on Market at 6th. Order the Reuben. Tell them Robert Jones from Non-Human Radio sent you. They will have no idea what you're talking about. But anyway, it was really good. So, Jeannie, I'm looking at the clock. You know what time it is right now? It's time for the Animal Rights Calendar. Can you pick it up from there?
Great. I'm going to keep it really short. But here are some upcoming animal-friendly events in the area. And remember that info on upcoming events, as well as a little summary of Robert's talk, will be posted to the show notes at nonhumanradio.com. So first up, and urgently, volunteers are needed for some work at Animal Places Rescue Ranch in Vacaville. I know it's 2 hours away from Chico, but I think it would be worthwhile for folks to go. Last Sunday, Animal Place rescued 1,300 layer hens from a large egg farm in Southern California, and now they need volunteer help for the next month or so to help perform health checks, declumping, and barn cleaning. Declumping is a sad artifact of battery cage housing for egg-laying hens. The hens literally pile on top of each other. So volunteers need to go around bedtime for the chickens and remove them from these clumps in which they can injure each other and suffocate.
Wait, can I ask? I'm sorry, I have to interrupt.
Yeah.
Jeannie. Actually, you know, we have a few minutes for me to interrupt. So is this a common practice? This is how the chickens live normally?
If they're in battery cages, there are 5 to 6 hens in a cage, and if it's 5 or 6 hens clumping up, I suppose they don't kill each other. But when they're put into the small groups that they're put into at Animal Place post-rescue, then, yeah, it's an issue. It's just good husbandry. It's just to keep them a little healthier. So, and then barn cleaning is another responsibility. So if you're interested in this, send an email to Jonathan Hussein, which you may remember he was a guest on our show.
Our first show.
Yeah. At jonathan@animalplace.org. If you're interested, they have a variety of shifts and a variety of needs of a number of volunteers at each one. I just met a woman who from Chico who went down there over earlier this week, and she said it was an amazing experience. So I highly encourage folks to do that. And if you can't make it out to volunteer, you might be interested to know that after the hens are rehabilitated and they're used to living as normal, healthy, happy chickens, you can apply to adopt them through Animal Place. And that's a really good option if you want to have backyard hens. It's much better to get them from a rescue situation. Just as with dogs and cats, it's better to adopt, don't shop.
Nice.
So there's that. I want to pass on word that the activist group Vegans of Davis, who we also featured earlier for a pig protest, is holding a peaceful protest on Wednesday, April 13th, next week, from noon to 1 p.m. at UC Davis, which is holding a milking contest at their April picnic. And they're asking for some help with protesting and leafleting in a civil manner. And the media are expected to respond and report on it. So it'll be a good opportunity to represent the animals.
Jeannie, may I interrupt for a moment?
Yeah.
What, did you say a milking contest?
Yeah.
Is that what I think it is? A contest to see how much milk you can milk from a cow?
Yeah, but this will be manual. Humans will actually be using their hands to milk the cows as opposed to hooking them up to a machine to suck them dry.
Well, you know what? A future show, because I bet you there are people listening right now who are thinking, you're just milking a cow. What's wrong with that?
Yeah.
I think we have to put that on our docket.
Yeah, we definitely will talk about the dairy industry.
Yeah.
Okay.
You mean the animal excretion industry?
Secretions, yeah.
Secretion, yes, that's it.
Okay, so this is the last event will be, so when you went to Citizen Fox?
Yes.
Or Kit Fox, and you had your Reuben?
Yes, it was good.
What was the meat part of the sandwich?
So. Seitan.
Okay.
Hail Seitan.
So this Saturday, April 16th, not this Saturday, Saturday next, the Chico chapter of Dharma Voices for Animals will be holding its monthly vegan cooking class at the Sky Creek Dharma Center in North Chico. This month's class is on how to make seitan.
Yes.
And guess who'll be teaching it?
Who's that, Jeannie? Who's teaching it?
That'll be me.
Go, Jeannie.
Seitan, if you don't know, it is made from gluten, which is the protein part of wheat and other types of grains, but mostly wheat. And when you prepare it properly, it's a savory, chewy, sliceable, friable, and bakeable vegan meat alternative that you can make in your own kitchen. Store-bought seitan is great. At a restaurant, it's excellent, but it's a little expensive. And so if you make yourself, it's cheaper, and you can adjust the flavors to your own tastes. The class I teach is very beginner-friendly. And is also low cost, and we have scholarships for low income attendees. The registration link will be posted with the show notes.
Excellent.
And if you have an event that you'd like included in our weekly calendar, send an email to me at nonhumanradio@gmail.com. And I thank you very much, and I hope to see you at an event soon.
Jeannie, thank you. Well, we're just about out of time, but not before our animal rights. Subversive thought of the week.
Jeannie, our animal rights subversive thought of the week comes from Gandhi, whose nonviolent civil disobedience led India to independence from the British and still inspires movements for civil rights and freedom across the world. End quote. In a gentle way, you can shake the world.
Go, Gandhi. Still significant. What do you have? Any final thing to read for us, Jeannie?
Non-Human Radio is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR members and by D.A. Lampe Construction, a proud supporter of KZFR and Community Radio in Northern California. For more information, visit dalampeconstruction.com. This has been Non-Human Radio, a production of KZFR 90.1 FM Chico.
Hold on a second.
The views and opinions expressed on this broadcast are entirely those of the hosts and do not in any way reflect the opinions of KZFR, its board, or its staff. Our theme music is Ready to Fall by vegan activist rockers Rise Against.
We're having a little technical difficulty, so we're not going to hear that music. But here's what we can say. If you missed any portion of the show, you can go to nonhumanradio.com and you'll get whatever you need there for our show. Isn't that correct?
That's right. We have show notes and links to events registration. Be sure to stay tuned for The Real Issue, which is coming up next. Until next week, be different, be better, be kind.
Go vegan.